Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The weakening labor market is reducing the flow of passive dollars into the stock market. Both labor supply and labor demand are falling in tandem. On the supply side, immigration into the U.S. has dropped from an annual increase of around 2 million people per year since 2020 to effectively zero today. Also, demographics are playing a key role in the decline of labor supply. U.S. population growth has slowed from over 1.8% post-World War II to just 0.5% today. The population is also aging. Estimates suggest that over 4.1 million baby boomers will reach 65 annually and over 11,200 per day between 2024 and 2027. The labor force participation rate was 58% post-World War II, but then began to rise to 66% as baby boomers flooded into the job market. Between 1990 and 2008, the labor force participation rate remained around 66%. Since then, it has started to decline and is back to 62% today. On the demand side, artificial intelligence is putting downward pressure on hiring. Estimates vary and range from 200,000 to 300,000 job losses during 2025 alone. In addition, debt-laden economies just grow more slowly and create less jobs. Rising interest rates also tend to depress growth and hiring. The U.S. economy has seen the end of the 40-year bull market in bonds. Inflation being above the 2% target for the past 5 years, along with the massive $2 trillion annual deficits, are adding to a $39 trillion national debt. This is pushing investors to demand a higher coupon rate on U.S. debt, which acts as a depressant to business formation and growth. When you add all this up, it has led to, at least for now, the end of employment growth in the United States. Back in January of 25, there were 170.7 million total American workers. Today, there are 170.4 million people employed. A reducing labor force means less money pouring into 401k plans and into the stock market. That is the exact opposite dynamic of what has been happening in the last few decades. These are the salient bullet points over the past week that you need to be aware of. The U.S. spent $11.3 billion over just the first week of war in Iran. U.S. home foreclosures rose for the 12th straight month in a row in February. Foreclosures are up 20% year over year. The default rate on the $1.8 trillion private credit market has risen to 9.2%. higher than it was in the 2008 global financial crisis. Q4 GDP growth revised down to 0.7% versus the estimate of 1.4% and down sharply from Q3's growth rate of 4.4%. The Fed under Jerome Powell printed The Fed under Jerome Powell printed $18 billion of base money supply last week alone. Yep, $18 billion. Inflation in January was up 3.1% on core personal consumption expenditure, which that's the Fed's preferred metric, well above their 2% target. The headline figure increased by 2.8%, also nowhere near target. That inflation reading was measured before the war in Iran, which has subsequently caused the price of energy to spike by 40%, more than that now, which means the headline reading will most likely be rising above core. The producer price index for February rose by 3.4% year over year, and the core jumped by 3.9% year over year. The January readings were 2.9% on headline and 3.4% for the core. So inflation is heading on the producer level, every level, but producer level here, much higher on headline and much higher than core than it was previous month, and much further away from 2%. These stubborn and rising inflation numbers also reflect what was happening before the war began. Therefore, and of course, the Fed did not cut interest rates at its March meeting and will find it very difficult to lower rates for the foreseeable future. The reason? Inflation is still well above target and has been so for the past 5 years, and the war in Iran is sending prices even further away from that 2% inflation goal. The fiscal and monetary stimulus that was scheduled for this year has been at least delayed, if not abrogated. Overlay this backdrop on top of the most expensive stock market in history, and you see the danger. And you could see it most relevantly in the total market cap of equities to GDP. I love this figure. The total market cap of equities is now an incredible 220% of GDP. For reference, this measurement was about 50%. Between 1975 and 1990, the total market cap of equities was about half of GDP. Now it's well over 200% of GDP. Okay, so let's turn to the Middle East real quick. There are two ways this war most likely gets resolved. The first has a very low probability of occurring. Iran agrees to hand over its 440 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium and agrees to open the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for the U.S. and Israel to stop the bombing. The problem is that both Israel and U.S. demand regime change in Iran. Hence, it is hard to imagine they will settle anytime soon for anything less than the evisceration of the Islamic Republican Guard Corps and the Ayatollah's regimen. The second and higher probability is that the war winds down slowly over the next few weeks to a much degraded scale, and that allows the U.S. to start escorting a small number of ships through the Gulf, sending oil prices somewhat lower. Not $60 a barrel, but more like maybe $80 a barrel. The latter scenario is feasible and therefore prevents us from aggressively shorting the market at this point. We could get there, but we're not there yet. The model isn't say to do it yet. We have hedges in place and have repositioned the portfolio to prosper during the temporary sojourn in stagflation. Stagflation is bad for both stocks and bonds. We might not be in stagflation long, but it's just bad. It's very hard to make money, especially if stagflation is something that's not going to last very long. Owning precious metals, energy, defensive stocks, and shorting rate-sensitive stocks and bonds is how you prosper during periods of anemic economic growth and rising inflation. Stagflation is a condition that makes it very, very difficult to make money while owning a typical, I'm going to say very difficult, how about almost impossible, virtually impossible to make money owning a typical 60-40 portfolio. And this situation is greatly exacerbated when both stocks and bonds are in a bubble. Now, 2022 was a great example of this. Everybody lost money in everything. So is what's happening right now. I mean, the S&P is down over 2% year to date. It's down 5% from its recent January high. Stock and bond prices are falling concurrently. And that's what happens in stagflation, but you don't have to be a passively managed pigeon. Pencil portfolio strategy is still up on the year. The market is extremely expensive. Its foundation is built on silly sand, consisting of debilitating debt, teetering asset bubbles, and massive money printing. We have been moving. The reason why we're having a positive year, despite all this chaos, is we have been moving to a more defensive posture over the past few weeks. And we will continue to do so, continue that process, if the inflation-deflation economic cycle model indicates that it's warranted. In the meantime, we remain nimble and on high alert. Active and even proactive management has never been more crucial for your success.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.